James chapter 3, and I'm going to be reading from verses 13 to 18, and I'll be reading from the New American Standard. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. May the Lord bless the reading of his words.
James chapter 3, we're going to be looking at God's wisdom, right? Heavenly wisdom as opposed to what I'll call human common sense, right? Which is such an odd term, because if you've ever met humans, there's nothing common about their sense. I don't know if you've met one or not. I've met a couple of them. And occasionally, humans don't give us a lot of opportunities to understand their common sense. Perhaps you've ever been to the airport. Common sense would be if you're sitting at the back of the plane, and you run from the back. Do we have any back rushers? If you are one, repent. You're in the back of the plane and you decide to rush the front of the plane because you think you'll get off faster when actually you get off slower and now everyone around you is angry, right? Or we were at the Chiefs-Cardinals game. Well, it's the Chiefs game. But there we go. We got everybody awake now. But the parking lot is not a demonstration of earthly common sense. Humans lack the common sense in the parking lot, right? They think that if they whirl their car this way or that, we saw the greatest spectacle of humanity I've gotten to see. I love people watching. I love malls, but I don't love malls because I want to shop. I love malls because I want to watch people. They are astounding to me, right? And at the game, we're after the game, we're sitting in the minivan, right? And we're waiting for, you know, all the cars to move and stuff, and there's a fan. By the way, no one knows where their car is, right? They look like zombies wandering the wilderness, and somebody found their car, but there's another car, and everybody's trying to get each other, you know, let me in, and this and that. And this lady is, like, begging, let me out, let me out. She thinks she's funny, right? And they don't think she's funny. They are not letting her in. So she stands in front of their car, and it's like, I'll wait here. And they said, that's fine. The passenger of their car got out and stood behind her car. Well, this is going to end well. And it ended with them arguing a little bit. It was for humans, it was hot. It was rather tame. We've seen humans be worse about it, right? I've been to church business meetings and things like that. I've been to church. I know what people can do, right? And so they resolved their thing, and that SUV definitely did not let her through, right? But in her wisdom, someone in that car had some earthly wisdom and said, yeah, complete strangers in a 110-degree parking lot when their team just lost, go stand in front of their car. That'll end really well, right? People just, common sense, right? Earthly sense, we think it's so common, but it's not, right? Driving will do this to you. Right? Common sense says when that blinky light on the back of the car says that they're going to come over and turn, that they're going to go over and turn. Sometimes Arizona sense is that's like a race light. They see that thing flip on and they're like, oh my goodness, I got to pass them. Right? Like, people are dumb. We just are. We're not that awesome. We're terrible. Even secular people know this, right? I was listening to a late-night commentator who's definitely not a Christian, and he said, I begin every interaction understanding that people are evil and dumb, right? That's what we are, right? We were given one job in the garden, don't eat the fruit. What did we do? We ate the fruit. And not only did we eat the fruit, but we gave it out, made it a buffet. Right? I think this is evidence for Adam and Eve being Baptists, but that's beside the point. We like our food, and we like sharing our food, the potluck, right? The Garden of Eden just sounds like a good time. But we so often rely on our own intellect and wisdom, right? We think we know best. And I know I've finally reached the age where I am young, but not youngest, right? So now I am not the bottom of the totem pole. I have a whole generation I can blame for everything, right? So when you blame me, I blame them, and so on and so forth, right? And, you know, so you get to hear a lot of advice and wisdom and how you should act and, you know, things like that. And my assessment is a lot of it's really bad. Just being honest. A lot of the advice we give one another in life is really bad, and I haven't even gotten to the Bible stuff yet. We so often rely on ourselves. And the gospel of, or the letter of James, right? James is an interesting book. Martin Luther hated James. He called it an epistle of straw because it is the book that is famous for you need works, right? Paul is all about you have to be justified by faith. And James comes out, for instance, in James 2 and in 18, he says, "But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without works and I will show you my faith with works." Right? So James is all about the working out of faith, right? The actual productivity of faith. And so a lot of us skip it there's a couple verses we grab, but otherwise we skip it. And it's an odd book as well because it's not as neat and orderly. It's a little bit like the book of Proverbs, a little all over the place, right? Paul, you can kind of follow, like Romans is, law schools read Romans because it is beautifully articulate and lays the argument out smooth, right? And there's a logical flow, and James jumps from topic to topic, it seems like. But James has a lot to say, right? And James is answering maybe a different question than Paul. Paul is answering the question, how are we justified? And James is perhaps answering the question, how do we know that you are justified? Right? Paul is dealing with the actual act of giving you that salvation. And James is dealing with how do we know? How do we trust? James is one of the early letters. And so they're still working out. How do I know you're a Christian? You know, we can't check your software and find out what you are. I can't check your whatever, right? We're figuring this thing out. And so God gave James, and James comes out, and basically, this is basically James, is faith without works is dead. If you don't have works to accompany your faith, you don't have faith. And I'll argue this is kind of a central thought here, is James does not know of faith without works, and neither should we. James doesn't know what that means. James doesn't know what it means to have Jesus in my heart and not see it. He doesn't know what that means. And so we're going to look at God's wisdom, right? And the wisdom of God and the contrast. So here in James 13, we start out with, who among you is wise and understanding? Right? Who has wisdom and understanding? Who is the one? And this is in the context. If you look back up at 3:1, you get an interesting statement. Not many should become teachers, my brothers, because you know that we will receive a stricter judgment. So this seems to be in the context. James is a little tricky to do this kind of thing with, just because the letter is all over the place. But it seems to be in the context of those who are wanting to teach, those who, if you will, stand up and have the authority to say something. Thus says the Lord, right? And so a lot of this is going to be in the context of teachers, something like this, or Sunday school, but I'm going to expand it to each one of us. I'm going to say that every Christian here is not off the hook, right? You may not have the official title teacher, but you have the capacity to spew words from your mouth. And what comes out is what you teach. So I'm going to apply this to all of us today. So just because it's to the teachers, right, I don't have a mirror here. Right? I'm not blasting myself. I've dealt with this text now all week. I'm kind of tired of getting blasted by it. So now I'm going to share that with you. So who among you is wise and understanding? Who has the reputation of being wisdom, right? The skill with which to navigate life. One of the earliest occurrences of wisdom is actually back in Exodus when they're getting ready to build the tabernacle. The two contractors are described as men of great wisdom. able to work with all kinds of materials. That's the vision of wisdom, right? Wisdom is not the ability to sit back and stare at your navel. It's not the ability to pull out pithy sayings, right? We had a guy at a previous church, loving to death, but he had every saying. Every day's a good day if you make it that way. No, it's not. Some days are terrible. There's some days I cannot make good. It's just bad, right? So it's not the ability to just whip that out, right? To sound smart. We have a lot of people that can sound smart, but that's not wisdom. Wisdom is the working out, right? It is the skill to work things out, right? It's the skill to navigate life. Wisdom is a practically seen thing. And then understanding, right? Who has the ability to look at all of this and to comprehend it and to regurgitate it? Right? Understanding here is not just the idea that I memorized facts, it's the idea that I can skillfully share. Okay, so who is wise and who is of understanding? And then James answers this question. By his good conduct, he should show that his works are done in the gentleness that comes from wisdom. Guys, that's a tough verse. Let me show you why that's a tough verse. You don't get to decide for yourself that you're wise. Age doesn't make you wise, just like age doesn't make you foolish. You know what being young makes you? Young. You know what being old makes you? Old. That's what it does. The number of trips I make around the sun, or the lack thereof, does not decide whether I'm wise or foolish, deserving of honor or shame. What makes us wise, what gives us the ability to be deemed, titled as a wise one, is the good conduct that we should hide. No. Show. Did you catch that? That's what makes this verse tough. It's actually the demonstration of wisdom that makes us wise. That we show, that we don't hide back here in our pocket. I don't surprise you with being wise. I have to be wise, right? That's the trick. And it's that I show the good conduct that he should show, that his works are done. And it'd be sure nice if there was a period right there. You just do your thing. But no, look at the quality with which the work must be done. In the gentleness that comes from wisdom. Qualifiers like that are what make things hard. We are a pragmatic people, right? Who cares how it got done, the thing got done. And there's places in life for that, right? But there is a certain expectation as Christians that it must be done a certain way. To put it bluntly, I don't care how much we get done. If we do it the wrong way, it doesn't matter. I enjoy VBS. But if we come not this way, with gentleness, if we come with grumbling, with strife, with all these other things, if we don't come through the wisdom of the gospel towards it, I don't want to do it. Does that make sense? It doesn't matter. I don't care that we get the project done. If we're not acting in gentleness as we do it, it doesn't matter. Here's the reality. When Jesus judges us one day, it will not be, tell me how much you got done. It will be, tell me how you got it done. It would be better to never see a soul won, but you walked in gentleness and shared the gospel in gentleness for your entire life, but never saw anyone come to Christ, than it would be to walk in wrath, be a jerk, but saw 1,000 people come to know Christ. Now, did God work in spite of that other person? Absolutely. But God will not judge in spite of that. He will say, how did you walk? Did you walk in gentleness? Was your wisdom seen? So productivity doesn't matter. It does, but it doesn't. It's the character with which you walk in that. So we start out here with the question of the day, right? Which is, who is wise? And how do you know if they're wise, right? And the image here is that there were many people who wanted to be the wise teacher. I want to be the one that everyone sees. Paul deals with this, right? In Philippians, he's got people preaching out of rivalry. And Paul says, who cares? As long as the gospel goes out, I'm not riled up. We are accountable for our gentleness. So now we hit the middle section of our passage. So that's the positive, right? This is the goal, that you would be someone whose good conduct is shown, or good by the good conduct that you show, that your works are being done in gentleness that comes from wisdom. Now for a couple scary verses, 14 and 15. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, don't boast and deny the truth. And then he goes on, such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, natural. We'll talk about that word, and demonic. If something's described as demonic, I'm just gonna kind of clarify something here. If it's described as demonic, it's not good. Everybody good with that? Right? Cyanide is horrible for you. It will kill you. Well, but what if it tastes good? Doesn't matter. It'll kill you. Run from it. Flee from it. So let's look here. If you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart. It's interesting. When the Bible talks about heart, we tend to think Valentine's Day, right? Aw. If you're in the South, that's like a great way to insult someone. Bless your heart, right? But we tend to think Valentine's Day. I love you with all my heart, right? And we think of this fuzzy thing inside of us that beats and pitter. We look like Pepe Le Pew running around, right? For those who don't know Pepe Le Pew, that's those guys. They're below me. I know Pepe Le Pew. Blame them, right? Send the blame down. I'll keep blaming them. But we tend to internalize a lot more. So for instance, in the Shema, right, meditate on the word of the Lord. There's actually writings where when they talked about reading, people didn't read in their heads. They read out loud. Origen actually has, he's an early theologian who, he actually says there's these possessed people that read without speaking. They didn't have any idea of just internalize it. So when the Shema says, go about your day meditating on the word of the Lord, it wasn't just I think about it and store it in my heart, it was I verbalize it. There was no concept of what's inside shouldn't be outside. And so when it says here, if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, the heart shouldn't be thought of in Pepe Le Pew Valentine's terms. It should be the volitional core of who you are. This is where the workings out come from. How do I know you have a vile heart? Because your actions are vile. How do I know you have a pure heart? Because your actions are pure. Jesus teaches about this all the time, right? A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot produce good fruit. We have an update at the Peck household. Remember, I've brought Limon, the lemon tree, up multiple times. Limon is a sinful wretch because Limon is a limon. He's a lime tree. You know what the lime tree cannot grow? Lemons. Really messed with our whole plan for like lemonade. We got to have limeade now, which I like limeade. It is impossible for that tree, that rascally tree at my house, it is impossible for it to grow peaches. Why? Because it's a lime tree. Turns out it's a lime tree, right? It cannot do this. Period. That's how it works. Good trees make good fruit. Bad trees make bad fruit. What do you do with a bad tree? You get rid of it. Those who have gardens, if you have a tree that's not growing leaves, you don't let it sit there year after year hoping it'll grow. Maybe you let it sit there. I don't know, right? But you get rid of it. Why? Because it's not growing anything. So this idea of things being worked out, this idea of what is inside must come out is very present here in James. If you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, bitter envy, I see that person walk in the door and I cannot stand them. I wish they'd get out of my way. Why are they allowed to do that? I would do it better. I am the greater. Selfish ambition. They'll realize how much they need me. They'll realize what I am. If you have that in your heart, don't boast and deny the truth. This word boast is interesting. It's not the idea of self-building up. It's the idea of don't open your mouth up. If you have that in your heart, I don't want to hear from you. I don't have time for you. You need to be quiet and sit in the corner, is what James is saying. Because that's in your heart and it's going to come out, so I need you to be quiet. We have no room for your words to come out. You see how harsh James is with this? James isn't saying, oh, well, we can work this out. We'll work with that person. Well, you know, that's just the way. If you ever hear someone say, well, that's just the way they are, run for your life. Because your friend has committed you to your sin. Selfish ambition and envy, if that is in your heart, James says, I'd rather you not give anyone any advice. That's earthly. We don't need it. We don't want it. We don't have time for it. Don't boast. Don't open your mouth. Because if you do, you'll get one of the highest charges that we have in Christianity, and that is to deny the truth. You're denying the truth of the gospel when you do that. When you spew vile things on others, when you do what I call word vomit on people, when you walk around and I can smell the decay on your breath because I know the decay that is in your heart, I don't want you to open your mouth because you are spitting in the face of the word of life. James doesn't know a faith without works, and neither should we. He goes on in 15. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, 15, such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. So this idea of self-promotion, self-all, I have been told so many, this is the hard part of being a pastor. Pastors don't get to have an opinion. And nor do I want one. People all the time want, it drives me nuts. People want to talk politics and all different kinds of things with me, cultural events. Quite frankly, all I care about is the gospel. And I get being a responsible citizen and doing all, and yeah, like I am a responsible citizen. I have opinions. I have all this and that, but they don't matter. My opinion on stuff does not matter. So I get worldly advice to heavenly issues. Well, Cole, that person's a jerk, so you should just go off on them. And I am not naturally an even-keeled person. My wife can testify. I don't have a temper, but I sometimes run through the house flailing my arms. I'm like, ah, right? Because to me, life is logical, right? If you say you're a Christian, you act like a Christian, right? If you say this, you are this, right? I that tends to be how I want to operate in life, right? And so you get earthly advice to heavenly issues. Well, as a pastor, you should just whack that person out of your life. You should do this. You should do that. You should just, quite frankly, tell them to close their mouth. The hard part is you have to act in accordance to the gospel. And there's times for a rebuke, right? But there's a lot of time where it's sharing the gospel with that friend and saying, friend, you're caught in sin. So notice what this evil ambition, this selfishness, what kind of advice it is. It's earthly. So it's from human wisdom, human thought, human rationale. Very seldom do I hear, and I'm talking in the church, very seldom do I hear advice given, led by a scripture. Some of the most dangerous words Christians say are, I think or I feel like. Most of the time when I'm in a Bible study, if I'm teaching like a home group or a Bible study of some sort, I will ban the words I think or I feel like. Because quite frankly, I don't care for those. I don't want earthly wisdom. I don't want earthly solutions to earthly or to heavenly problems. So it comes from the earth. And then it's this word, unspiritual. I love this word. This is one of the only occurrences of this word in the Bible. It sounds like psycho. The actual word sounds like psycho. And I don't think that's and you can see the trouble with translating it. I think Brian's earlier had natural. So we have unspiritual, natural. We don't know where to put it. It is psychotic to follow it. You ever have something that you don't exactly know how to describe it, but you know, broccoli is this way for me. And even worse, please don't stone me. Casseroles are this way for me. I don't like casseroles. I don't know how I graduated seminary twice already, how I've been a pastor. I do not like casseroles. Why don't I like casseroles? I don't know. I just don't like them. You can't rationale with me. You can't argue with me. I just don't like them. Well, sweet potato casserole with the crunchies on top. And Kristen makes pineapple casserole. Those are basically dessert, though. So otherwise, breakfast casserole, can't do it. No, mm-mm. Why don't you like it? I don't know. I just know I don't. There's certain things in life you just know it's not good, right? Ever been around somebody's dog that you didn't trust? I can't describe why I don't trust that dog, but I'm not petting that dog. That's what this word is like. It is a icky that we just, all you need to know is run. Whether it's natural, unspiritual, whatever it is psychotic to want it. And then we have that final word there. It's demonic. It's demonic, guys. To live according to the world's standards is demonic. To seek worldly wisdom first and to offer worldly wisdom and wisdom from selfish ambition and the desire to climb the ladder and you make your whole life about you and you start spewing that out, it is demonic. In case you didn't know, that's not. So we go on in 16. So if you want the earthly wisdom, that's what it is. The wisdom that originates from yourself. If you live life your way by your wisdom and want to spew that to everybody else, that's what it is. If you want that, my hat's off to you. I pity you. 16, for where there is evil and selfish ambition, there is disorder and every evil practice. I love this. You can't hide it. This terrifying evil thing in your heart, you can't hide it. You can't be good enough. You know when this a lot of times comes out? It's funerals. If you live this way, you probably have pretty good control of everything around you. Or at least you have the kind of ears that you can't hear anything bad, right? And so you walk through life and life's pretty under control. But when you die, guess what? You have no control. You have no power. This is what's interesting about a will, right? A will is written in the anticipation that everyone else is going to follow it. You have no control over it. Realize that that thing that you treasure, that one day you pass down to your grandchild because you treasure it, they might not. That's what we've got. And so everything comes to light. At funerals, this is when you find out how people really live their lives. You start hearing the stories of what they did, right? I can no longer defend your intentions once you've passed away. I can only supply your actions because that is all I have. You can't read my mind. I can't read yours. You have no idea what I'm thinking at any given moment. I could be thinking, man, I wish that this sermon was up. I could be thinking, man, I'm loving this type. You could be thinking, man, I really like his shirt. You have no idea of what I'm thinking. You know what I'm doing. And you assess what I'm thinking based on what I do. And at funerals, that's all we have left. All our actions will come to the light. We cannot hide. You cannot put good works on your filthiness in your heart. But, okay? So that's the warning, right? That's the terrifying warning, right? You be like that, you die. You live that way, you die. That's no good. Let me show you something good, though. But the wisdom from above, which oftentimes Jesus in the New Testament is equated with wisdom, right? James does this quite a bit, right? The wisdom of above, Jesus, right? You can equate the two generally. The wisdom from above is first. Now listen to these things. Pure, then peace-loving, gentle, compliant, full of mercy and good works, unwavering, without pretense. These aren't qualities. I think we make that mistake because of the way we read the Bible, right? Because we read internally rather than externally. We read these as qualities, and we think that somebody can have the quality of being gentle without being gentle. Do you know how you get to be gentle? By being gentle. I can't think of a more clever way to tell you that. These are all things that are lived out. None of these are hypotheticals. None of these are things that can be invented about you. None of these are things that you can have but act in the contrary. They have to be lived out. They have to be spoken. They have to be manifested in some way. So this wisdom from above is pure. How do you know you're pure? By being pure. We sometimes try to realize that the efforts to vouch for our sins make things complicated. Right? This is like when, you're all perfect. This is like when your friend growing up. We'll blame the friend, okay? I'll give a cop out. That friend who got in trouble, so what did they do? They told a white lie? Why we call it a white lie? That blows my mind. Because we know the disgusting nature of sin, but they lie a little bit. But then that lie kind of starts to get uncovered. So what do they got to do now? A little more, and a little more, and a little more. But we cover up for them by saying what? Oh, they're a good guy. Oh, that's a good guy. If you're filthy, you're not pure. Simple fact. And pure looks like Jesus. Jesus is the standard of pure. So all of these are acted out, right? This is why I say that James doesn't know a faith that isn't worked out. Because notice we have you're pure, and then you have peace-loving. Not just peaceful, peace-loving. I long for peace everywhere, in every moment. I love it. I want it. I need it. And gentle. Oh, so gentle. This is a hard one for me. I internally don't have a great meter for when, again, I've confessed, Bonhoeffer said that if I can't confess my sins to you, I'm not your brother. I've already confessed my sin of watching people at the mall and making fun of them, right? And watching people do dumb things. I don't have a great dumb things meter, right? I have great mercy unless you were an idiot. And then I feel much less compelled to be merciful, okay? When the sign says pull and you keep pushing, I don't feel the overwhelming drive to walk down the hall and help you. But that's not gentle, is it? That's selfish ambition. Gentleness. Gentleness is, regardless of the situation, treating people as though they're made in the image of God and that you are not the judge, but that they're a hurting person. Compliant. Man, the Americans don't like that one, do we? If I tell you, you got to be compliant, half of you, you know, you're just barely. I'm not going to tell you to be compliant and stay in your seat. But, ooh, we saw this. I love this, by the way, during 2020. Man, that was my favorite. Simple little things that we just weren't compliant with each other. Threw cows at each other on both sides of the church aisle. Because I don't want to be told what to do. Compliant with each other. Full of mercy. Not a little bit of mercy. Full of it, and good fruits, unwavering, without pretense. That last one, without pretense, that one bothers me. I want the right to decide who to be merciful to, as I've already expressed. Without pretense. It means regardless of who they are and regardless of who I am, I act this way. By the way, in case you think that this is just James, remember that it is Paul, who writes in Galatians, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, against which there is no law. Well, maybe James and Paul aren't enough for you. So flip over with me to the Sermon on the Mount. And we have, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are those who are humble, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. Blessed are you when every insult, or when they insult you and persecute you and falsely say every kind of evil against you because of me. Be glad and rejoice, because your reward is great in heaven. For that is how they treated and how they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And in case the New Testament isn't enough, we can go to the Old Testament. Micah 6:8. Who shall worship the Lord? Those who have clean hands and a pure heart, who reject evil and worship the Lord. The Bible is littered with this idea that your faith must be lived out. And it cannot be lived out by earthly standards. The Northern Kingdom died because of earthly standards. And so we are called to live in a certain way, treat people in a certain way, love in a certain way. And James could have stopped there, and that'd be great. It'd go great on a wall. It'd be a perfect frame verse, but no, he does this. Look what he says in 18. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who cultivate peace. Remember, peace is not merely the absence of war. Peace is when things are as they are meant to be. So we are called not just to act this way, but to sow these things. And in the Christian context, there is no way to accomplish these things apart from the blood of Jesus. Isaiah says that our best works are but filthy rags. And that filthy rags is not dirt. It is a grotesque image of gore covered in these rags. Waste on these rags. Think medical waste bag. Disgusting is our best works. We are only empowered by the Spirit to replicate the Son. Jesus says, become like me, deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. Become like me, look like me, walk like me, and talk like me. In the 21st century, email like me. Church, we are called to, and we're seeing this in the book of Acts. We're seeing the book of Acts is the wrestling out of what it means when the Spirit is in our lives. Can I tell you, when you live by the Spirit, you will live by the wisdom of the Spirit. So here's a final thought. I had a mentor once say, interact with everyone as though they're lost and be pleasantly surprised otherwise. Treat everyone as though they don't know Jesus and be pleasantly surprised when you're shocked and find out they do. Would I get to be surprised? Do you say things in the corners when you don't think people can hear? Do you think that you can hide it? Do you think that if you do enough good, everybody will think you're good? Do you think that because you have a reputation, a whole long string of things behind you, that now I don't have to do that? Somebody asked me, would you act, this was a lost person, they said, would you act the way you do if you weren't a pastor? And I would say, absolutely. Because that's the only way a Christian can act. So here's my question. Are you living your faith out? Are you defined by those words? Do you have a reputation in and outside of the church of being a gentle person, full of mercy, with soothing words of the gospel? Or is someone apologizing for you and making room for you, saying that's just the way they are? That's our question today. If you are in that shady realm of just the way they are, apologize, making room for you. Well, you know, you just got to take me this way because that's the way I am. You ain't the way Jesus is. And we don't need how we are. You don't need me to be me. You need me to be like Jesus. So this morning, we're going to have the Lord's Supper. And man, Lord's Supper is terrifying sometimes, isn't it? Remember what happened in Corinthians? They were not in unity with one another. There were divisions among one another, and people started dying. We skipped that part. People were dying. As Paul was doing an autopsy of this church, he said, you're not acting like Jesus. So therefore, you can't celebrate who Jesus is. We're going to have a time of response. I'm going to ask the Hudsons to come on up. This is the question I want you to wrestle with. Have I been this way? Or do I need to go take care of some business? Do I need to go humble myself and apologize? Do I need to go extend grace and mercy to someone? Do I need to go to somebody and say, I am sorry I've interacted with you in a worldly way? This is the time to do it. I would rather wait 3 hours and let us take care of business to have the supper than to hurry up and get out of here. You need to take care of business. If you don't know Jesus, if you don't know Jesus at all, right? If you're just trying, and maybe you're living a good life. Maybe you're successful. Maybe you've had earthly good. If you read later in James, James is really hard on people who have earthly success. He says it's not because of you. And it's not because you're a good person. In fact, you have issues. No matter how good you are, you have issues. And you can't solve them, but Jesus can. If you will deny yourself, right? If you will say, Lord, I am a sinner, and I need to turn away from my sin, and I need to turn to you. You will take up your cross, take up the death that Jesus died on your behalf, and follow him. Dedicate your life to him. He will provide peace. He will provide you with the means, the Spirit, to live this way. Because one day, God's going to return, and he will judge us. And he will say, do you look like my son? Do you know my son? And there's many who say, Lord, Lord. And he'll say, I never knew you. But the group he knows, he says, you treated me this way. So we're justified and saved by grace. But it sure does get worked out in our daily life. Father, we thank you for this day. I pray pray that you would help us to respond to you. It's in your name that we pray.